listening to the Simple Living Made Simple podcast. My name is Stephanie, and I'm a wife, mother of five, and the creator of the blog Simple Living Made Simple, formerly Winging It on the Homestead. I am far from an expert. I am learning and growing and figuring this simple living self-sufficiency thing out as I go. But my hope is to help you refocus your life towards what really matters, your family, as well as boost your confidence so you can start being more self-reliant and decrease your dependence on stores and commercial products. I love to help encourage modern mothers to incorporate simple living and self-sufficiency skills and knowledge into their busy lives. Join me this season as I interview homesteading experts on a variety of timely and important topics and share with you my appreciation for creating a homemade and homegrown life through gardening, food preservation, cooking from scratch, all while keeping it practical, intentional, and realistic. Hey guys, welcome back to the Simple Living Made Simple podcast. Today, I got to sit down and speak with Jill Winger from the Prairie Homestead. I'm so excited to be speaking with her for this episode because she is one of the first people that I started following, and she was the first person I really used as a resource. Her blog, The Prairie Homestead, is so full of all kinds of DIY recipes, all things for old-fashioned skills and knowledge. My favorite is the old-fashioned on purpose podcast of hers that she has. I don't know what season she's on, maybe 14 or so, but she's got tons of episodes with awesome guests. And she's just such a wealth of knowledge. We are talking today about her new book, Old Fashioned on Purpose, Cultivating a Slower, More Joyful Life. That comes out on Tuesday, September 26th, and I am so excited for it. I have it pre-ordered because I love all of her content, and this book is more than just a cookbook or a DIY manual, so we talk all about that today, and it was such a good conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome back to the Simple Living Made Simple podcast. I am so excited today because I'm here with Jill Winger from the Prairie Homestead. And she's really one of the first people that I started following when I wanted to get into homesteading, wanted to start cooking from scratch, having my own animals, having a garden and everything. And she's just so knowledgeable. And if you're at all interested in homesteading, you probably are certainly aware of her. So, hi, Jill. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Stephanie. I'm looking forward to this chat.
For people that are listening that don't know who you are, could you give me a little bit, tell me about yourself, about your family, your businesses, and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I'm best known for my blog. It's been around for quite a while, The Prairie Homestead. It was one of the original homesteading blogs. And I've been homesteading, my family and I, have been homesteading since about 2008, 2009. So we were doing it kind of before the rest of the world figured out what it was. When we started here on our property, there wasn't YouTube channels or Instagram accounts teaching you how to do all the things. So we kind of pioneered it a little bit in our own way. And I've been sharing it ever since. So still going strong, still love the lifestyle. And I love helping other people get started in it as well.
That's awesome. And so I don't know, you've been there since the beginning. So you've seen how the field, the niche or whatever it is, the lifestyle, yeah. I guess, has grown. Would you say that there's a self-sufficiency revival going on right now? Is that what you're seeing?
I definitely think so. Yeah. I think there's a huge influx of interest. I kind of think that COVID had a big part to play in that. I didn't see that coming. I didn't expect that, but I think the instability that we've all felt since the pandemic, and a lot of people are still feeling it, has prompted them to kind of return to their roots and think about how life could be different. I think that's a really good thing. I think that's a positive shift. I never thought, when I started homesteading all those years ago, and I felt like I was the only one, the voice crying out in the wilderness, that now it would be trendy and popular. So it's been interesting to see it grow.
Right. So what are some of the motivations you see behind, because there's so many aspects to homesteading, so many reasons to get involved, so many different things you can focus on and then kind of get, overtaken by the whole thing. How, what are the motivations that you see as someone getting started?
When I talk to people, and I like to do polls and surveys because I'm always curious, I see most people, the majority, coming into it because they want better food. They realize our industrial food system in America is pretty broken and messed up, and it's really hard to get good food choices in a grocery store. You can do it in some places of the country, but even, even in an organic food store, it's pricey and there's a lot of hidden stuff in there. So I think people come into it for the food. I think the other reason I see people coming into it a lot right now, which I'm a little bit more on the fence about this one. There's a definite kind of fearful vibe that's was probably created in part from what happened during the early years of the pandemic. And I see people coming to homesteading as a way of escape or, you know, to survive, or that fear-based mindset, which I don't dig as much because I feel like you have to have maybe a stronger reason than that to be able to sustain yourself in this lifestyle and stick with it for a period of time. And what I really love though, is when people, you know, they come into it for the food, they come into it to whatever, escape the zombie apocalypse. But I really love when they start to realize the deeper benefits to the lifestyle. And that's what I really have been promoting in more recent years is, yeah, tomatoes are cool, sourdough bread's fun, but do you realize what's happening in your brain when you are out in the garden or you're in the kitchen? Like, do you understand that this is good for your mental health and your physical health? And there's just like so much more happening in your life and in your body when you take on these old fashioned skills beyond just, oh, I get homegrown tomatoes. So that's a good place to start. But I love when people start to get that deeper understanding.
Right. So how much of it do you think is like rebellion? Just like maybe, and if someone's getting into it because they want to rebel against, I guess, against like the systems that are set up, is that like something that is motivation enough to keep started or really to make a significant lifestyle change?
That's a great question. I do see a lot of rebellion motivation. I get it. I'm a contrarian myself. I do not like to be conventional. I love to be off the beaten path. I think when I see it across the board, I've listened to a lot of different smart people, smarter than me, talk about what happened during the pandemic, where basically I never trusted the institutions in our, you know, that are set up beforehand, but a lot of people started to also not trust what they were being told by authority figures and government figures for good reason, because it was sketchy what was being handed down. And so people naturally had distrust for the systems and institutions that we've always kind of leaned on. So I think rebellion is a good starting motivation. What I see happening though is, if that's your only motivation, you have to keep creating that narrative in order to keep that fire hot. And I see that happening a lot in the homestead circles now. They came into homesteading after COVID. They were feeling distrust for the government, which I totally get 100%. But now, you know, things have cooled off a little bit ish. And now they're starting to get kind of conspiracy theories rolling around, because we have to keep that us versus them mentality really strong in order to keep ourselves motivated. And that's where I see people, honestly, I think they're just making things up. I've spoken to it a few times on my platforms. Like, there was this whole thing last winter that they said the government was like tampering with chicken feed, so we couldn't grow our own eggs. And I'm like, guys, like, stop. Like, let's be logical and think through this. And I think what that is they're trying to keep that rebellion motivation going, so they feel inspired to stick with it. But again, it's okay to start with that, but you got to find something deeper to keep you in it long term.
Yeah, definitely. Because there are so many benefits to it aside from just ensuring your safety, which is obviously is important, but
sure, absolutely.
Just even like being able to thrive in, you know, your daily life and, you know, better health and all those things, obviously.
Yeah.
So what I'm really interested when I talk to some people that are obviously way more experienced than I am in this, how do you balance your old fashioned time-honored skills? Because your podcast is old fashioned on purpose. There's a real place for these time-honored skills that, you know, that are kind of rare nowadays. Mm-hmm. But how do you balance that with modern conveniences and technology in your life?
Yeah, great question. Because I definitely have both. And I think sometimes people are surprised when they realize I have both. Sometimes people think they've caught me. They're like, oh, you have a phone. And I'm like, yes, I do. Right. Wow. Good observation. I'm on Instagram. So yeah, I do love both. And there's parts of modern life, you know, being able to sit here in a podcast studio with a fancy microphone and on a laptop talking to you is really cool. I'm thankful for that. I'm not quite ready to go completely off grid and dark and give all that up, because I love the challenge of business. I love connecting with people online. But to me, I love having the old fashioned side of things to keep me grounded and centered. And I feel like that's why, even though my life has changed a lot since we first started homesteading in 2008, I stick with those skills because they're a huge part of my life. Even as we've had more irons in the fire and more things happening and started businesses, we travel more, blah, blah, blah. I need the garden and I need the kitchen to keep me centered. And so for me, it's how can I, you know, ask myself, how can I mix the best of the old with the best of the new? I don't feel like the old ways are always the best or the new ways are always the best. I think that we get to pick and choose and craft how that looks like for each one of us. That's going to be a little different for everybody. But for me, I know that's where I find the most joy.
All right. Well, and you have a book coming out. It's called Old Fashioned on Purpose, and that is being released on Tuesday, September 26th. So I'm going to dive into you with that in just a minute after a couple other questions. But yeah, I think that that's, I don't know, I'm really excited for the book because I'm sure, as with all your content, it just dives in an extra layer deeper than just your surface DIY type stuff.
Yes.
So I have a question too. How do you think like our great grandmothers would be excited or at ease at some of the things now? Like, so my, like, for example, my grandmother was like a quilter and my mom and my aunts are doing quilting now, but you know, they have all these computerized programs and things. And do you think like they would be appalled at something like that as with other technologies that we've added to old fashioned skills? Or would they be like, oh, that makes my life so much easier, you know?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot because it's so easy to romanticize the people of yesteryear. And I honestly think that most of them, if they could have had running water or they could have had a computer to do things or they could have had a quilting machine or they could have had a rototiller, they would have loved it. I think that most of them, when we romanticize them, that they chose the hard on purpose, and some of them did, there was that pioneer spirit absolutely prevalent. The mountain men, you know, the ones were like, heck with civilization. I'm out of here, even though civilization was so much different back then. So I think there was that spirit alive, but I think the majority would have chosen something easier. And we can even see it through the last 50, 60, 70 years, the swing of the pendulum. You know, after World War II ended, there was a huge shift in industry. So many advancements, so many things changed. And that was really when a lot of the old timers, if you will, walked away from what they had. The remnants of those simpler times that we consider the better times, they were like, peace out, I'm done. So I even look at my own grandmother. She was an excellent cook. And she had been cooking, you know, from Great Depression era on. And when I started to get into cooking, I went and found all of her recipe cards. And I was so excited because I'm like, I'm going to get all of her from scratch, down home, wholesome recipes. And I'm so excited. And I actually opened up those boxes and it was all processed food recipes. It was, you know, condensed milk, Betty Crocker cake mix, lots of margarine, lots of cream of mushroom soup. So even her, like, she cooked from scratch as a younger woman, but she didn't do it out of principle. She did it because that was her only option. And as soon as industrialization took hold, she was happy to jump ship, if you will, even though I'm sure she didn't see it like that. So I don't know. I feel like we have a benefit now, where we're sitting in history, is that we can look at the old, where they were the forced to do things the simpler, old fashioned way. And we can look at the fruits of progress and we can decide, you know, which one are we going to choose? And we can have a little bit of both and be conscious. So I think it's an interesting place to be. And I'm actually thankful to be in this era where I can pick and choose. I like having hot running water. I like having a washing machine, but I also love being able to make sourdough bread and, you know, butcher my own chickens and all that. So I don't know. It's an interesting paradox.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that it allows you to be like more intentional on what works for you and your family and at different seasons of your life and everything. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I think sometimes, like, obviously, back then, if they didn't have to spend hours and hours and hours on end to make a blanket to keep their family warm, they probably wouldn't choose to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the romanticizing of it is definitely something that happens now.
Yes.
You cover a lot about raising kids on your homestead, and I'm just really inspired by that because I'm a mom of five and real little kids, and it's not easy. So I am interested. I'm always interested in like hearing your take when you talk about those kinds of topics. So could you talk about how having a homestead or homesteading activities or like activities positively affect kids?
Yeah. I love being able to raise our kids on the homestead. It's been I think it's been a little bit of a shortcut or a hack in terms of teaching them certain life skills. But I always like people to know that if they don't live on a farm or a homestead, there's other ways to impart those skills to your kids. So it's not just the farm is the only magic weapon, secret sauce, whatever. It's just a piece of it that works for us. So I think the biggest things we try to cultivate in our kids and that the homestead has really helped us with, personal responsibility is a really big one. That's really absent in our culture today. We can see that across the board. And so it's really important to me that my kids are able to take ownership of things, and see themselves with that internal locus of control versus an external. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that idea, but it's the idea that, an internal locus of control is that we happen to life. And that's that more idea, that mindset of empowerment, that mindset of, you know, I will figure it out. I will do the work. I will make this happen versus the external locus of control, which is this idea that life happens to us and we are just victims and we're just sitting here, sitting ducks. Oh, well, can't do anything about it. And that external locus of control is so pervasive in our culture right now with kids and adults. So I'm like, how can I push back against that and be that, you know, push back and get and be that contrarian mindset there for sure. And so the homestead gives us lots of opportunities to let the kids take ownership. And honestly, they fail and they make mistakes and they get to problem solve. And I think that it's just a really nice stage for that. Also, I love how it gives them more opportunities to be capable. I really believe that kids are more capable than we give them credit for, especially when they get into those preteen, teenage years. You know, it's really kind of a modern construct that teenagers should just kind of sit around and be just, they don't have a purpose. They just kind of sit, you know, they need to be coddled. And I'm like, historically, teenagehood wasn't really a thing like we view it today. And in kids of that age, their brains aren't quite fully developed yet, sure, but they're capable of doing really amazing things and really starting to figure out who they are. And so I love that the homestead gives us chances to put our kids in those slightly uncomfortable situations, get them out of their comfort zone and invite them to figure out what they're capable of. And that's cool to watch. And it's really good for them too.
Yeah, that's awesome. My oldest is 7. So, I'm still trying to teach them some ins and outs of things. And, it's good to know that that's what it helps shape them obviously for just all different areas. And one of my favorite aspects that I've heard you talk about before is the importance of kids being bored. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are really intentional with screen time here at our house. We, in the past have done some Netflix and TV shows. And honestly, when I had the really little kids, the hours from 4 to 5:30, when I was making supper, I was really happy and had zero guilt about putting them in front of a educational show. And like, that was sanity for all of us. So that's, I think screen time is in balance. That's the key for us. It's not 100% one way or the other, but I find that it's really easy, especially with modern parenting culture, that now that we have screens and iPads, we just plug our kids into those as soon as they get antsy or they start to annoy us, which totally happens. I get it. Like there are times when I'm like, too much noise, too many questions, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my mind. So I understand the pull towards that. But I think now that we have, you know, Wi-Fi everywhere and iPads, all the places and phones everywhere, is we're robbing our kids from this opportunity to be bored, because boredom is the birth of creativity and curiosity. And that's when, if you look at some of the greatest minds in history, were so particular about having times of solitude and quietness so they could be with their own thoughts and solve those big problems. And I know in my own life, and I'm sure we can all kind of attest to that, is when we are running without any margin and without any space, which is really easy to do, especially as a modern mom, like you're always running, always multitasking, but we can't be creative. We can't be big problem solvers in those modes because we're just getting from one thing to the next. Or, you know, when we finally sit down, we zone out on our phones or watch Netflix for hours. And that's taking away the ability for us just to sit and let ideas marinate and ruminate. And so it's not that we never, ever do screen time with our kids, but I find that when we've limited that and given them more free time and space, they really blossom. They get more creative. They start to play more. They start to come up with really cool ideas. They've taken on new hobbies and handicrafts. And I love seeing what that does. So you just have to kind of get through that initial withdrawal period where they're like, oh, I don't know what to do and I'm bored. And that's annoying as a parent. You just have to, you know, tough it out. And then when you get on the other side of that, cool things happen.
That's really awesome. Yeah. We go through, depending on like where we're at and everything, with too much screen time that I'm like, oh, this is driving me nuts. And then we kind of try to cut it back. But I agree. When we start cutting back, I find that they just play better. They're able to occupy themselves. It's like, they're almost more bored. They don't know how to occupy themselves in those times of like downtime.
Yeah.
And then also, I also find that like with at least two of the four that are doing things, that when they're, when normally I'd be like, all right, we need to calm you down. So here's a tablet or here's a TV show. Yeah. They actually need like this, they actually need stimulation.
Yes.
Instead of being like, calm down. You know what
exactly.
I mean? They need to be given something to do and like get their energy up. So that's a, you know, just something that is hard, but I think it's important too.
I remember the early years with the toddlers and the babies and the strollers. And yeah, it was totally harder. And I don't know. I'm glad that yeah, if I had to go back to that now, because I have a 13, 10 and 7 year old. So life is just totally different. And it would be hard to go back to that now. And oh, I have to take the diaper bag. And oh, there's a blowout. Oh, I'm milking the cow. So I got to go back to the house. And you drop your blanket in the dirt. And okay, now you put the poop in your mouth. And like there, it was a lot harder. It was totally harder.
Yeah.
So I see all those moms with the young kids doing the thing. But it is worth it. It is worth it. And the kids start to learn that they're part of the team and the world doesn't revolve around them and they're important, you know, in the processes, and they get all those cool life skills. So, but yeah. Sometimes you're in the trenches for a while.
So one of the other things I really appreciate when I talk or I listen to you talk in your podcast and any of your content is that you're really like such a doer. You're not just a talker. You don't just provide content. You actually go out and you find an issue or a challenge and you, or at least it appears or whatever, I'm sure you go out and you solve it or you chase it. So that tenacity is really inspiring. So could you tell me like what inspires you and what it is that you're chasing?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think it kind of depends on the day, what I'm chasing. I have found over the years, that I think it came from jumping out of the airplane and building the parachute on the way down a few times in my younger life, that I learned that that was scary, but it actually felt really good when I finally got to the bottom. And I did the thing that was making me nervous or the thing I wanted to do, but I was too scared to initially try it. When I finally did it, I loved that feeling. And so now, you know, 15 years later, 20 years later, it's almost become a habit for me. And so honestly, when my life becomes too run of the mill or too comfortable, I start to get antsy. And I've learned to kind of crave being out of my comfort zone in different things. And so I think that's what keeps me driving forward, even though, you know, our homestead is pretty well established. We've been doing this a long time. We've built a lot of the things we wanted to build. From outward appearances, people would think that, you know, it's done. It's we've arrived. And I don't want to ever completely arrive. I always want to be continuing to be challenged and pushing myself. I just find the most joy there. So, you know, even now, maybe it's a sickness. I don't know. But when everything gets, you know, done, then I'm like, okay, what can we get better at? What can we up level? What challenges can I bring into my life? I need that. My brain needs that. So it could be just how I'm wired, but, that's where I'm the happiest.
Well, that's really exciting. And I'm really excited about, your book coming out, because at least how you've preferenced it when you've, promoted it or talked about it, it's that, you know, it's come from a real inspiration part, point for you. So could you tell me, a little bit about that? Because I know on your podcast over the last couple of seasons, you've really done some deep diving on some important issues, and that's been really exciting and fun to listen about. So, your book's not a typical cookbook or DIY book. So could you tell me a little bit about it? Although I love your cookbook, by the way.
But. Yeah. Oh, thank you. So I wanted it to be deeper, like you said, and I had been sitting with this tension for a couple of years before I started writing it. I know how much homesteading has changed my life. It has just transformed my mindset and how I move through life, and it's helped my family so much. So I really believe in it as a way to kind of redeem some of the problems with our culture. But I also know that not everybody is going to move to Wyoming like I did and buy a milk cow and 60 acres. And that's just not doable for everyone, nor does everyone even want to do that. So I'm sitting here going, I think everyone needs these skills and principles, but not everyone necessarily needs to buy 60 acres and a cow. So I'm like, how can I distill down the most important parts, the best parts of homesteading, and then package it in a way that everyone can have a piece of that? So we can really get down to the essence of what makes it such an amazing lifestyle and so useful. And so I sat with that for a while, and that's what ended up becoming the book. There's 8 pillars we identified that just helps people to understand the old-fashioned skills. I ask a lot of questions. One of the biggest one is, why did we move away from this in the first place? Like, I think people maybe assume that they know why, how we got to where we are with the industrial food system, or, you know, the 40-hour work week, or all those cultural institutions that we think are so normal and so run of the mill. Like, when you really start to examine how we got to this place in our history, it's pretty eye-opening. And honestly, it makes me go, well, why do I have to do it that way? Why can't we do it different? Like, why, who says I have to educate my kids like this, or eat like this, or work like this? And so as I started to ask those questions, it really became clear how much of it is just a construct, how much of it's not really the way it has to be. There's so much wiggle room to be creative and craft the life you want. So those 8 pillars just help people do that in their own way. There's history. I dug into some science in terms of how our brain works and how it rewards us for doing old-fashioned things, believe it or not. And also I did bring some practical stuff, but it's not your typical picture, you know, recipe tutorials. There's a few little things here and there, because I know when I feel inspired in a book, I usually am like, well, okay, cool, how do I do it? So I brought some of that in, but by and large, it's really more inspiration. Just getting people to think and ask questions that's my goal for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. What kind of research did, you started talking a little bit, but what kind of research did you do for the book?
Yeah, a lot. I did a lot of digging into scientific journals, and I would find a study here and then just follow rabbit trails for days sometimes. So it'd be like, you know, it'd be like 18 layers deep in a topic of how our brains, like one of my favorite studies was how our brains reward us for working with our hands. And I looked at immunity studies of why dirt's good for us. And then a lot of digging into history, I really wanted to understand the last 150 years and why we moved away from the farm the way we did. Like, what caused us to leave the farm? If people like you and me were like, oh, the farm's amazing, and we think it's like the end all be all, why did basically the whole entire culture go, no thanks, don't need it? So I wanted to understand those motivations, and the history of consumerism was super interesting. So I dug into some books and readings on that. That was something I didn't expect to be so fascinated by. So yeah, lots of history, lots of science, but it was a fun process. It was heavy, definitely heavier than anything I've created before in terms of like a lot of research, but it was really enjoyable.
Wow. That's really awesome. It's really exciting. And I'm really interested in reading it. I can't wait for it to come out. Like I said, it comes out Tuesday the 26th.
Yes.
But people can go pre-order it.
They can. Yeah. They can either pre-order if they're listening to this prior to the 26th, any of their favorite retailers, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, your local bookstore. That's what I always, you know, recommend, that people go to their local stuff. And then if they're listening to this after the day, they can still buy it at all those same places.
Gotcha. What are you hoping to challenge the audience to consider? I guess you kind of talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is, the book is for homesteaders. I think homesteaders who are already doing some of the things will get a lot out of it. But really what I envision, I wanted to get into homes of people who would never listen to this podcast necessarily, or who would never follow a homesteader on Instagram, that really haven't ever started to question what they're doing, that there could be another way. I just want to challenge them to start thinking for themselves, to be more aware of what they're doing and the choices they're making, whether that's in regards to food or how they're building community or not building community, or how much they're working with their hands, and just kind of shake people out of this sedation that we find ourselves in our modern culture, where we just go from one thing to the next. We're not thinking about what we're doing. We're kind of obsessed with convenience and ease. I just want to go, hey guys, wake up. There's something better. There's something bigger. It doesn't mean you have to get a milk cow. It just means like start thinking about what you're doing. So that's what I hope it does for people.
You also cover a lot about the importance of community, and it seems like you're from a really great small town. So could you tell me a little bit about the importance of fostering community? And if someone's like looking to move to a small town, is there something mm-hmm. that they should look for, or is it more like something you can foster in your own community? How do you choose that path? Because I'm kind of there right now.
Yes. Yes. great question. So that was some of the research I found, or I kind of stumbled across, was how much just community and civic involvement has drastically dropped over the last number of decades. A lot of reasons for that, but I was just really fascinated, especially as our small towns across America are really drying up. And there's kind of this denigration of small town America from the population centers. It's like, oh, they're backwards and they're not worth anything. And, you know, it's this kind of this poo-poo attitude. So I was really interested in that because we do live near a super small town. It's 175 people. And it is seen a decline for quite some time. And it's a town that has always been kind of the brunt of jokes and, oh, it's Chugwater, and people would roll their eyes. And, you know, there was like, and honestly, my perceptions moving to this area, 15 years ago, I was like, that town's not worth even investing in. Like, there's nothing there for me. There's nobody there like me. There's no one my age. Like, I'll just do my own thing. And a couple years ago, I realized that maybe that wasn't a good attitude to have. And that maybe perhaps if I applied some of my energy and efforts to the town, my husband as well, both of us, that maybe things would change, or maybe we could create some growth. And so we realized that when we committed to doing that and really digging into our area, instead of always like wishing it was different or going to other neighboring towns to get socialization or, you know, but really getting committed, like, this is where we are, so we're going to invest here. Like, really cool things started to happen. We started to make more relationships. We started to find all kinds of people that we didn't realize were there. We ended up, you know, taking over a little restaurant in the town. And that's brought a whole host of challenges, but also good things. And there's a little revival happening in the town now. And I'm not going to say that's all us. There's a number of people helping that, but it's like, it's getting news, or is hitting news outlets statewide, because everyone's like, what's happening in Chugwater? Like, what's going on? Like, we didn't ever think Chugwater would see a revival. So it's been really inspiring to me that if you just have a few people willing to put in some effort and be the visionaries, really cool things can happen in regards to community. And I don't think everyone needs to move to a small town, although I think small towns are awesome. I think you can totally do that same thing if you live in a suburban neighborhood or an apartment complex or, you know, a big city. You can start to cultivate those in-person relationships around you. And I've actually had some people say, well, I don't know why you're talking about community. It has nothing to do with homesteading. And I'm like, y'all, like, this is everything about homesteading. Like, the homesteaders of old, they weren't into self-sufficiency as much as you think. They were really about that community shared sufficiency. And so, yeah, I think it's an old-fashioned principle that's often overlooked, but just as crucial in our modern times as, you know, cooking from scratch or growing a garden. I think we all need to be cultivating community more wherever we live.
Yeah, I think that is so right. I mean, like you said, I think that over the last decades or whenever it's been, the community or importance of the community has decreased just in all areas. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, you can't do everything yourself. So you're relying on other farm, even if you're a farm and you grow stuff, you're still going to be relying on other farmers, yes, in the area or other people to do things, you know, so that community sufficiency is important. So
totally. Yes.
That's awesome. So I always ask people this question, because I think with homesteading or simple living or whatever you want to call it, you're always learning something. It's like a lifelong learning process. You're never going to learn everything you want to the first year or whatever. So what skills are you learning right now? I mean, I know it seems to the audience that you've mastered everything, but what is on your plate for learning?
Yeah, no, I definitely want to keep having a challenge because, like I said earlier, I get really antsy when I'm not learning something new. I think maybe we overestimate having it all figure out, or we put too much value on this idea of arriving or figuring it out. Because I'm like, to the outward world, I think people would say I've arrived in different areas. I'm like, no, I don't want to have arrived. Yeah. I want to keep growing.
There's not a finish point you're trying
to meet. Not a finish point. It's the journey. And that's cliche, but I'm like, it's so true. It's really the journey. So I think right now I've been playing around with a little bit of gardening, just trying to understand my soil better. Like, I've always had decent gardens, or, you know, mostly decent. I've had lots of failures, but, you know, I've been gardening good enough, and I'm like, how can I up-level that and really start to understand what's happening underground? So I've been playing with soil tests more. I've been trying to understand, cover crops and what's happening with microbes, and doing things even more organically than I was before. So I'm not disrupting the soil life. I realize I'm low in nitrogen this year, so I'm trying to figure out how to add nitrogen in organic ways and work with, you know, legumes and nitrogen fixers and cover crops to kind of play with all that. So that's intriguing to me. And I have a long ways to figure that all out, because that's such a big, big world, but that's been pretty cool. And then I'm actually, horses are what brought me into homesteading. That's kind of a part of my story. And I took a sabbatical from them for about 10 years as I was having babies and building the businesses and focused on the homesteading. And I really feel myself coming back to that kind of full circle. So I'm spending a lot of time investing in my horse skills and learning different things there, which are definitely challenging, but that is feeling really good to be kind of thrust into beginner mode again, with all the messiness of that. Yeah. But it feels good to be stretched in that area.
That's awesome. All right. Well, where can my audience find you? If they don't already know.
Yeah. My original blog, the OG blog, is The Prairie Homestead, and it's still going. So they can connect with me there, and it has connections to all my other stuff I do. And then if they're on social media, I'm probably most active on Instagram. My handle is jill.winger. And then if they like podcasts, which I'm assuming they do because they're listening to this awesome podcast, Old Fashioned on Purpose is the name of my show.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And your book again is Old Fashioned on Purpose, and it comes out Tuesday, September 26th. I'm so excited. I have it pre-ordered, and I got your whole little course, which I'm surprised I didn't already have in the past. I have a couple of them, but I didn't have the cooking one. So I was like, well, that's a great deal.
Glad you grabbed it. Yes. Fabulous.
So that's really exciting. So thank you so much for joining me. This was such a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great question.
Thank you for joining me for this episode. To help others find and enjoy this podcast, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a comment and 5-star review. You can also find me over on the blog at Winging It on the Homestead or on Facebook and Instagram. You can also grab the Ultimate Vegetable Guidebook over at www.savemyveggies.com.